you did your meditation in the proper way, you would have noticed that your mind calmed down and your body relaxed. So this is the purpose of this meditation. This kind of meditation is called Samatha Bhavana. Samatha means calming the mind. And when we speak of vipassana, we are really speaking about correcting our thinking. That is the meaning of vipassana. I have told you earlier that there are three parts of what we call the mind. These are not parts in the sense that the mind is an entity with three parts. That's not what it is. What we call the mind is simply the activity of the body. It is in this body that we have what is called a brain and a nervous system. It is this brain and the nervous system that becomes activated. And that activity is what we call the mind. But when we speak of the mind, we are not really referring to an activity. Because when we speak of an activity, we are speaking of an objective experience. When we see a ball in front of us, that thing that we see is an object. And when we see the ball moving, then we speak of the activity of the ball. So that is the idea of activity and the idea of an object is an objective experience. But when we speak of the mind, we are speaking of a subjective experience. A subjective experience is a sensation, a feeling, an emotion, a thought. These are subjective experiences. So when we speak of the mind, we are talking about a subjective experience. When we speak of matter or energy or force, we are talking about an objective experience. So when the Buddha spoke of the mind, he used three words, chitta, mano and vijnana. Vijnana refers to seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching. That is vijnana, that is perception. Now, what has been perceived, we begin to think about. That thinking part is what is called the mano. Now, we are not talking about, although I use that word part, we are not talking about an entity and a part of an entity. It is simply a description of an activity. So it's what we might call a mental activity. Now, when we say mental, we are speaking about a subjective experience. But if I say it is the activity of the brain, then we are talking about an objective experience. So we have to be very careful in describing what we call the mind. So that mental activity is what we call mano. Now, once we have been thinking about the object that we have perceived, then we begin to react emotionally to that object. If the object is something pleasant, the reaction comes in the form of a desire for that, or a liking for that, which is emotional. And if it is seen as something unpleasant, a hatred arises, or aversion. And if we begin to see it as something dangerous, a fear arises. Now, these are the emotional reactions, and that is what we call chitta. Chitta refers to the emotional part. So, what we are trying to do when we speak about meditation is simply we are trying to stop this reaction. We are simply organisms, like a machine, reacting to stimulation. The environment stimulates the senses, and then we react. And that reaction is not something we do. It is just happening to us. So it is unconscious. That's why we don't even know about it. We are not consciously doing it. So in meditation, what we are trying to do is to stop this reaction. Because the reaction is what is called suffering or dukkha. I spoke about this earlier, so I don't want to go into a detailed description. You already know. So what we are trying to do is to stop this reaction. And to stop this reaction, we have to become conscious of the reaction. Because the reaction is unconscious. So it can be stopped only when we become conscious of the reaction. So our meditation is to become conscious of the reaction. So this emotional reaction accompanies the breathing. Because the emotional reaction is not a thought. It is a physical activity. Because messages go from the brain to the what are called the endocrine glands, and a hormone is secreted into the blood, and the blood being carried to the various parts of the body, changes take place in the body, and that is what we call an emotion. So an emotion is a physical thing. Although we perceive it subjectively, and therefore we regard it as a part of the mind. Even thinking is a physical thing because it's the activity of the brain. But we perceive it subjectively as a thought. So it is the subjective experience that we call the mind. The objective experience is what we call matter or energy. So the whole aim is ultimately to stop this reaction. And first we try to stop the physical part of the reaction, which is an action, comes in the form of an action, in the form of speech or physical behavior. And when we control that behavioral part, we call it sila. When we control the emotional excitement and calm the mind, that is called samadhi. And that is samatha bhavana. And when we begin to become aware of our thoughts and change our thinking, that is vipassana bhavana. That is connected with the mano part. So when we speak about meditation, we are really speaking about what is called the Arya Attangika Magga, which I translate as the Sublime Eightfold Way, normally translated as the Noble Eightfold Path. I don't call it the Noble Eightfold Path because the word noble, it doesn't convey the meaning. This is a supernormal state. And I call it the sublime state. A sublime, which is supernormal, not a normal thing. So the Arya means the supernormal or sublime. And this supernormal eightfold way actually, when followed, a person rises above the normal state to a supernormal, sublime state. That is why it is called the Sublime Eightfold Way. So, very important to understand that the Buddha has explained this as the Sublime Eightfold Way, the path. And as long as the Sublime Eightfold Way is understood, and as long as people follow this way, the Buddha said, the world will not be free of arahants. It is only when people stop following this and begin to follow other things that there will be no arahants in the world. Arahant is a perfected disciple. And we should understand that the word arahant, arahang, ara means fetters or bindings. Hang means to break the fetters. A person who has broken the fetters is the arahant. Because although we may be thinking we are free, we are not really free. Some people think that we are born with a free will, but we are not born with a free will. So we have to break these bonds, and then only we'll be free. We are not free to act as we want. This is why so many Buddhists, they recite the five precepts. But how many really follow the five precepts? Even if they decide to follow the, even if they make a resolution, I'll follow the five precepts, they'll find that very often they begin to break that. Why? Because they are not free. They are bound. And they are being bound by these emotions. We are carried away by emotions. We are not able to act rationally. So this is why all the suffering in the world is due to these emotions. So it is to gain control over these emotions that we practice the Sublime Eightfold Way, which begins with Sammāditti. Sammāditti is, I translate that as the harmonious perspective. Usually translated as right view. This is not just a view. People can have views. But this is a perspective. Perspective means the way we look at life, a different way of looking at life. This is not a view like believing in rebirth or believing in karma or believing in God. This is not the, those are views. But this is a perspective. Looking at the world that other people also see, but we see it in a different way. That is the perspective. And this perspective is given in the form of what are called, normally called the Four Noble Truths. Again, I translate this as the fourfold sublime reality. Now, when we use the word reality, different people can have different realities. Now, the reality of the insane psychotic is different from the reality of the normal person. These are two different realities. So in the same way, the reality of the sublime one is different from the reality of the normal person. So this is the sublime one's reality. That is to see dukkha, dukkha. I have been trying to find the proper word to translate the word dukkha. It's very difficult because these words have different meanings at different times. And the real meaning doesn't come out. When we use the word dukkha in the Sinhalese language, a certain meaning comes to us. But if we use a word like pain, we can't get that meaning in English. If you use the word pain, it looks like if the leg is paining, it is a pain. So it's more physical than mental. But when we say dukkha, we are mainly talking about a mental pain. Again, we can use a word like sorrow or grief. That is also dukkha. So, something mental is really meant here. So, this is why some people have translated with the word suffering. Now, again, when we think of suffering, people might think of starvation, unemployment, or suffering in hospitals or something like that. But here, this is a mental suffering. Now, this is why the important thing is we don't like to look at the realities of life, because the realities are so unpleasant that unpleasantness is the dukkha. Now, when a child is born, the mother and the father will be very happy, and maybe some neighbors also might come and you have a party and celebrate. And every year you begin to celebrate birthdays, birthday party, singing songs and all that, eating nice food, enjoying the birth. But they don't like to think that every person who is born is going to grow old and die. Some people die without growing old. They simply die. Life is insecure. The moment you are born, you are in a very insecure state. The child that is born, if not taken care of by the parents or elders, the child will die automatically. Although that insecurity is there, no one likes to think about that insecurity. They'll be very happy that the child is born. Actually, what people should be doing is to cry when the child is born, because the child is born into a very insecure state. Any moment the person can die, even a grown-up can die. So, but people want to forget this. Even if a child says, I'm going to die today, even as a joke, then the mother says, no, they never mention that. You see, they don't like to even think about it. So you see, we don't like to look at reality. Our whole life is an effort to cover up this reality. And that covering up is what is called repression. We are trying to forget it. When we have worries, difficulties, we try to forget the difficulty instead of dealing with the problem. Some people try to forget it, and that is what is called repression. But the more we forget, or we try to forget, it comes up from time to time, and it begins to worry us. So people keep on holding these worries by trying to forget, without dealing with the problems. Now, it was the Buddha who looked at the problem and began to find a solution. That's how it worked. and ultimately he found the solution. And having found the solution, the Buddha began to talk about it. And then, of course, people don't like to hear it. That's why so many people call this pessimism, because they don't like to hear about the realities of life. Now, the important thing is, what the Buddha pointed out was, we don't have to worry about the realities. It is not the reality that has to be blamed. It is our emotion which is going against reality. That emotion is what the Buddha called tanha. Tanha is really, the word means thirst. Thirst. Why did the Buddha use a word like thirst? Because thirst is not something that we do. When we become thirsty, we don't decide, I must become thirsty and become thirsty. It's not something we do, it just happens to us. So in a similar way, our emotions are not things that we do. They are things that happen to us. It happens because it is dependent on the necessary conditions. That dependency on conditions is what is called the paticca samuppada, normally translated as dependent origination. Now, if it is something that is dependent like this, it is not something that we do. But we always personalize this and say, this is mine. This is my desire. I desire. I hate. I am frightened. That we personalize this. And the moment we personalize the desire, we cannot get rid of it. Because to get rid of the desire is to get rid of a part of myself. Because that is myself. How can I give up myself? Especially in the Western part of the world, when I say we have to give up our desires, our emotions, they complain about it. How can we give up emotions? Because that is the most important part of ourselves. So you see, because people personalize this. But in Buddhist countries, when we say we have to give up our desires or tanha, they simply say, oh yes, because the Buddha said so. They don't even understand why. It becomes mechanical. You see, the important thing is our personalizing things. This is something that Sigmund Freud understood only halfway. Because he used a term to imply this. The emotions he called the id, 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 which is the Latin form of it, it. So the it is neutergender. Neutergender means we are not referring to a person there, the it. But the thinking part he called the ego. The thinking part he called the ego, because he thought the thinking is what can be regarded as the self. Because earlier a philosopher, Descartes, said, I think, therefore I am. So he identified with the thinking part. So Freud also thought that is the proper word to use, and he called it the ego. But still, he saw the whole mind and the personality is like a machine. He called it an energy system, which is a machine. A machine is an energy system. And so the point is that the Buddha pointed out that these emotions are the real cause of all the suffering in the world. Because the emotions are unrealistic. That Freud saw that, that emotions are not realistic. But it is difficult to control the emotions. He thought emotions are instinctive, that means built inside the body. We can't remove them. We have to satisfy the emotion in some way or other. And his way was sublimation. He thought it was some kind of energy that has to be given an outlet in some way. It's come from inside. But the Buddha pointed out that that is not how it is. That it is really coming from outside, in. And therefore, we can remove it completely. Just as water, all the impurities in the water come from outside. Water itself is a pure substance. And therefore, it can be purified. So in the same way, the Buddha pointed out that the mind is pure in its original state, and therefore it can be purified. Because all the dirt comes from outside. So this is why the Buddha pointed out that there is a way. And this way is first to understand the problem and how it can be solved. The problem is what is called suffering is really when our emotions come in conflict with reality. Our emotions want permanence, reality is impermanent. Everything in the world is impermanent. So only by removing this unrealistic desire or the emotion, that we can remove it. So in order to do this, the first thing is to understand what is happening, and then we should see that the solution has to be to free the mind of emotions. And when the mind is freed of emotions, the mind becomes calm and tranquil. So that tranquility of mind becomes the goal. This is why when we meditate, we try to calm the mind. And this is the meaning of nirvana. Nirvana means, nir means non, vana means shaking. Non-shaking of the mind. That's why I call it the imperturbable serenity of mind. That is nirvana. Even some of the Western philosophers like the Stoics and the Epicureans were speaking about this. Most probably they were influenced by the Buddha. But of course, the Western people don't like to accept that. Because that was a time when the Buddha went to various parts of the world and preached these things. So anyway, somehow the important thing is to understand that our goal becomes this tranquility of mind. So another important thing, another important thing is that the human mind today, there is a kind of psychological psycho-cybernetics, where they begin to speak about the mind, comparing it to a computer or a guided missile, which means that it is a goal-seeking machine. So the human mind is always seeking goals in the same way. And the Buddha saw this. And this is why he spoke about this nirvana as the goal. Some people, because they don't understand what nirvana is, they begin to think it's some mystical state or some kind of heaven. It's not a thing like that. Nirvana simply, it is the imperturbable serenity. And so, the first step is to stop this reaction in the physical way, and that is to gain control over our speech, our action, and our way of living. And that is the meaning. When we say sammāditti, it is the harmonious perspective, and sammā sankappa refers to this goal that we visualize. We are thinking, creating a mental picture of the goal. And then sammā vācha, sammā kammanta, and sammā ājīva refers to the harmonious speech, the harmonious action, and the harmonious way of living. Now, very often people translate sammā ājīva as a vocation, a job. This is not a job. This is simply the way of living, the lifestyle, sammā ājīva. If it is a job, it is called jīvika, not ājīva. This is sammā ājīva, which is the lifestyle. And then once we have gained control over the behavior, the next step is to gain control over the emotions. And there we come to the sammā vāyāma. Vāyāma means there are four parts to purify the mind. Saṅvara, pahāna, bhāvanā and anurakkhana. Now what this means is, if there is a room, when we want to clean the room, we have to first find out from where the impurities come into the room. The dust or dirt that comes into the room is really through the windows or the doors. So first thing is to close, shut the doors and windows. And then we clean the room by using a vacuum cleaner or whatever instrument we use. We clean it and take the dirt off, remove the dirt. Now that is prahāna. So, in a similar way, when we want to purify the mind, we have to close the doors from which the impurities come. And the doors will be the senses, the eyes, the ears, the nose, the tongue, and the body itself. How does the dirt come? When we see something which is attractive, a desire rises. When we see something unpleasant, a hatred arises. Now we can't stop opening the eyes, and we cannot avoid things coming to our vision. But there is a third thing that we can do, which is to stop thinking about what we see. When we see something pleasant, we have to stop thinking about the pleasantness of what we see. When we see something unpleasant, we stop thinking about the unpleasantness of what we see. Or when we hear a sound, we stop thinking about the pleasantness of the music or tune or something. And we, if it is unpleasant, we stop thinking about the unpleasantness. Or good smell comes, we don't think about the pleasantness of the smell. When an unpleasant smell comes, we don't think about the unpleasantness. When a good taste comes to the tongue, we don't think about the pleasantness. When unpleasant taste comes, we don't think about the unpleasantness. Now that is the kind of thing we do. That is called guarding the senses. That is the way we prevent the dirt coming into the mind. Now the next thing is, if any dirt is present in the mind, how can we remove it? That is called prahana. The removal is simply to understand that every emotion that comes, whether it is a desire or a hatred or a fear or a worry, all that comes with a mental picture. It's like watching TV. There is a picture inside the mind. And as long as we hold that picture in the mind, the emotion will be aroused. So if we want to get rid of the emotion, we have to get rid of that picture. Throw the picture out. And that is done by something that we do when we watch TV. We can press a button and change the channel. So in a similar way, we have to change the channel on this TV in the mind. So we have to change to a good picture. Change the picture. That is the prahana. So, the next step is to cultivate a good thought. Now, the good thought here means it is important to understand that what are called bad thoughts and good thoughts. The bad thoughts are what are called the five hindrances. The desire for sensual pleasures, the anger, the laziness, sleepiness, worries, anxieties, and what I call the wavering state of the mind, the undecided state of the mind. Because normally our mind is pulling in two different directions. Our emotions pull in one direction, our thinking and reasoning pull in another direction. This is what Freud also saw. And he saw it as the cause of neurosis and psychosis, mental sickness. So this is the real meaning of vichikiccha, today translated as doubt. It's not doubt. It is a kind of indecision, a wavering state of the mind.